Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. It is November, if you didn't notice from the leaves on the ground and the frost on your grass. And so Election Day on Tuesday. Our guest today is Bob Gibson, Communications Director and Senior Researcher at UVA's Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service, Executive Director at the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership for 11 years. Also, possibly a little more famous here in the Charlottesville area, a political writer and columnist at the Charlottesville's Daily Progress for over 30 years. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Always good to join you.
And thank you so much, Bob, participating by phone. So excited to have him here that I have a feeling that Bob is joining us from the Washington, D.C. area because of plans to go to the Washington Nationals parade. I don't know why I think that. Is that true, Bob?
It was a heck of a parade and a heck of a rally yesterday. There were tens of thousands of us out wearing red in downtown Washington and giving our team, the Washington Nationals, a wonderful parade and a great welcome home with the World Series championship.
Well, I'm glad that I'm glad the Nationals won, and I'm glad that you found time to join Sunday Morning Wake Up Call and listeners' time today to talk about pre-election day politics for 2019. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a very important year in Virginia.
Yes, it is. And so let's get on with the topic. So Virginia, one of only four states with legislative elections. And so a lot of people are saying that all of USA will be watching what's going on. Is that true?
Pretty much. It's important for a number of reasons this year, one of which is that it's sort of a nationalized election. It doesn't have to be, and they aren't always nationalized, but this year it seems more nationalized than most, as the Trump and Pence campaigns for 2020 have geared up and the impeachment campaign against Trump has started. And it looks like many people in the country are treating this election as a bellwether.
Vice President Mike Pence was just in the area yesterday.
He was in Louisa for a stop at a manufacturing facility in Ferncliff, and then he went to Virginia Beach, where he was 2 hours late to a rally that a few more than 900 Republicans showed up for at a school in Virginia Beach to campaign for candidates for the House of Delegates and the Virginia Senate.
I heard he was at Carter's Mountain picking some apples. Is that true? Do you know?
I wasn't there, so it wouldn't surprise me. That could have been a reason he might have been late to Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
It's a nice mountain up there.
Yes, it is. One of only four states with legislative elections, a lot of people think that Virginia can be, I guess, sort of, I mean, you used the word bellwether, correct? I read a quote from Beto O'Rourke, the road to 2020, and he's referring to Democrats, the road to 2020 runs through 2019, and the success for the United States of America is dependent on what we do this year in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Well, it's very clear that 2017 elections in Virginia were, for the legislature, a very important change year, because Democrats picked up 17 seats in the House of Delegates, almost tied the House. They did tie, and the tie was broken by a drawing out of a cup. So we had a tie in 2017, and the question is, is the Trump effect on the 2019 election as large as it was in 2017. In 2018, we got three new members of the congressional delegation from Virginia, three women who were elected in previously Republican districts, and there was a bump attributed to the Trump effect in that election. The question is, in this off-off year election, where there's no statewide candidate, there's no congressional candidate, there's no federal office on the ballot, just 100 seats in the House of Delegates and 40 seats in the Virginia Senate, is the Trump effect going to be as large? And Democrats believe it will be because of the nationalization of the election. Trump is sort of shaping the Republican Party in some ways to reflect his personality and loyalty to him. And that has a reaction among Democrats in Virginia who believe that that's not the way they want to see Virginia going.
Well, a lot of people say that Democrats poll well, but they don't always vote as strong. And you can question whether that line holds true over the last couple years with the changes that we're talking about in Virginia, the turning of 17 seats at the legislative level, the turn of, you said, three seats at the state representative level in 2018. But in a lot of ways, whether you say it on a federal level or a state level, Democrats poll well, but it seems as though Republicans are the ones who have a much more they have a stronger base that get out and vote every year that there is a chance to go vote. True or not true?
Well, there is a lot of truth in that, and the truth is that every year is different in terms of the election cycle and what is on the ballot, and this is the off-off year. The year that gets the most turnout is the presidential year, and that will be 2020 and was 2016 in Virginia, of course, and we had a large turnout, well over 75%. And I think the year that this year reflects, the off-off year, when there's no statewide candidate, no congressional candidate, the average is around 29 or 30% turnout. And when the off-off year turnout is that low, older voters tend to be the ones who reliably turn out. And older voters, Republicans do rather well in that demographic, that age demographic. Younger voters tend to vote in presidential years, but not so much in off-off years. So the question, the real question is Virginia going to see a typical off-off year electorate show up, which would give an advantage to the Republicans to keep the House of Delegates, for example? Or is Virginia going to see maybe 5 or 10% larger turnout than normal for an off-off year, in which case the Democrats might wrest control of the House of Delegates?
What is the expectation that's being put out there, that's the conversation being discussed?
Well, people agree that there is a good deal of interest this year. They aren't sure how much above the 29% turnout Virginians are likely to show up in numbers on Tuesday for the elections on November 5th. And it's really a bit unclear at this point. And we have more contested races for the House of Delegates than we normally have. There are 17 to 20 races across the Commonwealth that are close enough to be within 10 points per se. And most elections are outside that margin. Most elections in a gerrymandered state such as Virginia, and we're one of the top five or six most gerrymandered states in the country, don't have that great a chance to elect someone in a contested race. But this year we do have 17 to 20 races that I think are close enough to call contested. So it's very difficult to predict who's going to show up with two more seats than the other party.
The weather often plays a role in that. The weather for this coming Tuesday, Election Day, is considered to be, or at least from my phone app, is typical fall weather, partly cloudy in the 60s, at least here in Central Virginia. So it's not going to be a freezing cold or a rainy day. So I would think that that's going to bring about the best possible percentage of voters that we're possibly going to get in an off election year.
That should help turn out on Tuesday. That's true. It looks like a good forecast in the mid-60s across the most populous parts of the state, kind of sunny. So I think we're not going to be hurt in turnout by the weather, but there are many things that control turnout, and one of them is the intensity of emotion that people feel, in this case, about the president. Does that mean that his base, the Trump voters, are going to turn out in larger than average numbers? We don't know. They might choose to stay home because of what's going on with impeachment, although I wouldn't bet on that. And the Democrats are clearly counting on a larger than normal emotional factor driving voters to the poll.
Again, our guest today, Bob Gibson from the Weldon Cooper Center at UVA, where he's the communications director and a senior researcher, the name familiar for a lot of folks as a political writer and a columnist at the Daily Progress for over 30 years. We talk about Election Day upcoming on Tuesday of next week. So many things to talk about in the hour. The record number of women candidates running, the new anti-gerrymandering maps court drawn this year, impeachment inquiry and its effect on the races, possibility of a full parts and Richmond Democratic community, both parts of the legislature and the governor, and what might happen, all kinds of things throughout the hour. So stay tuned 13 minutes after the hour with Bob Gibson. Bob, let's talk about the anti-gerrymandering maps. The 2019 races of this year, the anti-gerrymandering maps under court-drawn maps. In 2021, the maps will be based on the 2020 census. Under what sort of effect do you think that these anti-gerrymandering maps will have on Election Day next week?
It's very hard to tell because the maps in 25 districts in mostly eastern Virginia, the Hampton Roads area up to Richmond, Chesterfield, that part of the state, 25 districts were redrawn because of a gerrymandering decision in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court, that showed that the districts in that eastern part of the state, 11 of them were drawn unconstitutionally with racial gerrymandering. They put more African-American voters in those districts than they should have. The Republicans did when they redrew the House lines back in 2011. So 25 districts in eastern Virginia, southern Virginia through the Richmond area have different lines, and we don't know the effects in an off year election particularly because we don't know who's going to choose to show up to vote on Tuesday. So it could be that could give the Democrats an advantage that might help them take control of the House of Delegates, where they only need a pickup of two more seats to control the House for the first time since 1999. If the Democrats also take the state Senate, which is viewed as even more likely, that would give the Democrats control of state government, the governor's office, the House of Delegates, and the state Senate for the first time since 1993. So there's a lot at stake in this election. And those 25 districts that have been redrawn in eastern Virginia will play a key part in that. We don't know exactly the extent to which they will.
Can you tell me a little bit about the court that did the redrawing of those maps?
Well, they hired a California election expert called a special master to redraw the 25 districts that had to be had their lines changed to correct the racial gerrymandering that was done back in 2011, where too many black voters, African-American voters, were packed into 11 districts. So the special master put more county seats in the same district in a place like Suffolk, where the Republicans have a delegate who has risen to power in the House Appropriations Committee as its chair, and now he faces a district that's more Democratic than the one he's been winning in the last 20 years. The same with Speaker Kirk Cox in Chesterfield County and Colonial Heights. He has been representing that area since the late 90s, and he has a new district that is significantly more Democratic in terms of its base voters, but we don't know who's going to show up to vote on Tuesday. So we don't know how the redistricting done by the federal courts is going to affect Tuesday's elections.
There's also an article or two that I read, again, our guest today, Bob Gibson, where he's a senior researcher and a communications director at UVA's Weldon Cooper Center, as well as a longtime political writer and a columnist. I also read some articles, Bob, about multiple Republican legislators have, I think the word that was used in several of these articles was conveniently retired this year. And I don't know if that was because of the redrawing of the maps or what we'll get into in a little bit about the attachment to the current presidential administration that some find difficult.
There aren't that many districts in Virginia's House of Delegates or State Senate that are seeing retirements this year. It's sort of the normal number, so I wouldn't credit the redrawing of the districts or the unusual nature of this year being a nationalized election with Vice President Pence and Donald Trump being more on voters' minds perhaps than normal, with having much to do with retirement in Virginia. There are more retirements by far in the House of Representatives in Congress this year, where next year those folks would face election, and perhaps they don't see the House as likely to switch back to Republican control in 2020 as it changed hands to the Democrats in 2018. So there are a lot of retirements in the Republican House of Representatives ranks, but not so many in Virginia.
All right. We've got multiple topics that deserve a long-winded efforts and discussion. So let's take our first break here. And Bob, hang tight. Bob Gibson with us, taking time to discuss this by phone after participating in the Washington Nationals parade and celebration. So, Bob, hang tight. Be right back. And we're back in action with Bob Gibson. And we're talking about pre-election day 2019 topics. Bob, thanks for being with us. Are you tired after that Washington National celebration?
No, it was energizing and exhilarating. It was really a fine parade. I've never seen a better parade, really, and I've been to a lot of parades in D.C. I grew up in Arlington, and parades are sort of a normal thing here. But this, there was so much love and affection in that crowd for those players on the Nationals team yesterday. It was really something to be a part of.
A question. Not just Virginia election topics, but President Trump has invited the Washington Nationals to the White House as Major League Baseball champions. There's an awful lot of Hispanics on that team. The team has said, yes, they will attend. Sean Doolittle, a UVA grad and one of the players on the team, has already said, thank you, but no thank you. Me and my wife and myself, we support topics and behavior that we feel that the president does not. And so we're going to step back and not go. Are we waiting for other players to do the same? Are we waiting and show concerns for some of the Hispanics on the team to step back and say, we're not going to go?
I haven't heard of any names other than Sean Doolittle who might join Sean in not going to the White House tomorrow afternoon. It's something that has come up more and more since Trump has been in the White House, that these routine team invitations for championship teams have seen members of those teams so opposed to the president's policies that they have decided to skip the White House ceremony. And frankly, I don't think the fan base blames them. Sean Doolittle is an excellent relief pitcher, a closer. He was on the Wahoo baseball team with Ryan Zimmerman, who was an original Nat, back in 2005. Both of them were excellent players at UVA. And Sean has concerns about climate change and LGBT rights that the president doesn't share. And he just said, I can't go to a ceremony with a president who talks like that, referring to the way Trump somewhat derisively refers to people.
All right, so let's go back to some of the Virginia Election Day topics. And as we talk about LGBT rights, Virginia has a record number of women candidates and alternative candidates than the traditional male, white male candidate running for the General Assembly this year. Talk about that for a few minutes.
Well, Virginia, it's a very notable part of this year's election, in that the Democrats in the House of Delegates races have chosen 52% of the party's nominees to be women for the first time, and that's much higher than any previous record. Republicans have also nominated a record number of women to be their candidates this year. They have 14 women running in the House of Delegates races. The Democrats are contesting 92 seats in the House, so they have 48 of their 92 who are women candidates. Republicans have chosen not to contest 30 seats in the House. Half of those are in Fairfax County, where they believe that they don't have as good a chance of winning elections in gerrymandered districts that are heavily Democratic. So they chose not to run candidates in 15 districts that the Democrats, rather, control in Fairfax County, and 30 seats overall. Democrats are just leaving 8 districts uncontested. And in the Senate, we have a large number of women running. We have 6 on the Republican side and 17 of the Democrats running for the state Senate are women. And women tend to be the tip of the spear in terms of going after the Trump election and reaction to, of course, starting with the Women's March in D.C. right after the election. And the groups of activists who've been most active in the Democratic Party have been women, especially the last 2 years.
Are there specific female candidates that stand out?
Well, the one I'm most familiar with is Sally Hudson, who, of course, won her primary back in June and is going to represent the 57th House of Delegates district in Charlottesville and Albemarle, parts of Albemarle. Sally is an economist, an MIT economist. She is a professor at the Batten School at UVA and will be, I think, the only economist in the House of Delegates, perhaps the only economist in the General Assembly. once she takes office in January. Her election is assured because Republicans decided not to challenge the
he's taking over David Toscano's seat.
David holds it until the 1st of January, yes.
Right, and she's already agreed to come on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on December 8th.
Very good. She'll be a good guest.
Yes. Are there any competitive seats with a female candidate or two that have taken your attention?
Well, the most interesting, perhaps, is a state Senate race between Amanda Chase, a Republican who represents Chesterfield County, and Amanda Pohl. So it's the Amanda versus Amanda race. And Amanda Chase is sort of the most, I would say, Trump-like of the Republican women, for sure, in Richmond and the General Assembly. And she has been known for her candor and her walking into the Senate chamber with a gun strapped to her hip. And some disputes she's had with police, both in Chesterfield County and in Richmond. And she has an interesting record with the Republican Party in her own county. One wonders whether she will have the unified vote of Republicans in Chesterfield, which used to be one of the Republican strongholds in the state, but lately has become a little more purple.
Again, our guest today, Bob Gibson, is the communications director as well as a senior researcher at UVA's Weldon Cooper Center, joining us by phone today on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, 29 minutes after the hour. Bob, do you think that we always talk about President Trump, and is he going to cause a problem on the scene for the Republicans? But do you think that Governor Northam will cause a problem and hurt any of the Democrats, referring to Governor Northam's yearbook photos and any of his history in that manner? Will he hurt any of the Democratic candidates in any way?
Well, the Republican candidates in the Richmond area are trying to use, some of them are trying to use the blackface scandal that erupted in February regarding our current governor, Ralph Northam, and his having a picture of someone in blackface and someone in a Klan costume or robes on his medical school yearbook page. Back in February, Republicans thought this was going to be a very big negative for Democratic candidates and would take the governor out of the running as sort of the major party leader who could rally support for Democrats in various districts. And to a small extent, it has. He has stepped back from his normal campaign role through most of the campaign, but his numbers have come back up in terms of support from the public, not to where they were before February when this scandal broke, but he is not the huge negative that Republicans had hoped he would be, even though some of them are trying to tie his blackface scandal around some Democratic candidates in the Richmond area. So I think Ralph Northam's remaining a governor with normal rather than abnormal support has not produced the effect that Republicans were hoping for.
Well, but it seemed to go all the way down the top three positions, right? There wasn't just Governor Northam. There was the lieutenant governor. I believe even something was assigned, a problem was assigned to Mark Herring. So
Mark Herring, when he was a student at UVA, in a fraternity at UVA, had a blackface photo as well. So both Ralph Northam and Mark Herring had this in their past, and it came up at the same time, basically. In February, it was thrown at the Democrats back then. And they really thought that it would be a big deal. And I don't think it's as big a deal, although Republicans sought to make it one. Democrats have stopped shying away from Northam and stopped shying away from him. They're both on the campaign trail now. So I think the effect has minimized since it was a big deal back in February. Justin Fairfax is a different case, and his allegations of sexual assault against him from past decades still follows him and will make him less likely to be reelected.
I just have to ask, is this because it's a, how much of this is because it's a different issue, wearing blackface versus sexual assault, and how much of this is because it's an African American and a white man?
Well, I think Democrats would point at the president and his record treating women and the allegations of sexual assault brought in his case.
Which is none. He hasn't been punished.
No, he hasn't been punished. And Justin Fairfax hasn't really been punished, except to the extent that public opinion has swung against him and makes him very unlikely to be reelected.
So let's talk about President Trump for a few minutes. Do we think that the impeachment inquiry is expected to have a role in state voter turnout in Virginia or the voters' decisions?
I think it will. I think we've seen year after year Virginia's political parties align more closely with their national counterparts. So the Republican Party of Virginia has become a little more like the Republican Party in the country at large. The Democratic Party in Virginia has become more like the Democratic Party in the country at large. And that's the way some of these campaigns are being conducted. The Republicans have sort of taken a page from Trump's Twitter page and are calling Democrats names like Lion Larry, who is a Chesterfield County Democrat running for a seat held by a Chesterfield County Republican delegate, who refers to him as Lion Larry. Similar names are being called in the 17th Senate District in Virginia, where Senator Bryce Reeves has run ads similarly disparaging Democratic candidate Amy Laufer. So I think that the tone of the races has been nationalized. The thoughts of impeachment being in the news every day and Trump making sure he's in the news every day also sort of makes it more likely that it'll have a major effect on turnout in Virginia.
There are some federal current folks, I want to say candidates, but that's not the word, although Senator Collins is a candidate for senator. She is having to run again, but she's not making her point known. Most Democrats in Washington, D.C., most Republicans in Washington, D.C. are blatantly, loudly stating what side of the impeachment inquiry they're on. Senator Collins is not, and there are multiple articles, multiple television and radio folks who will tell you, you know, what they think she should do.
Well, Susan Collins has a state in Maine that is very divided, very purple, and she faces a difficult reelection campaign in 2020. So she is being much more likely than most Republicans to sit this one out in terms of the commentary on impeachment. because whatever she says, she can be hurt by the Trump base of her party, which is apt to punish folks who differ from the president's line of defense. And there are other senators who are in her situation. I think that will have an effect next year. This year, I think it's a different case in Virginia. I think the Republican Party has gone along with Trump's insistence on fealty, insistence on loyalty to him. And this is not always shared, a feeling not always shared by Republicans. But if they say something that crosses the president in his defense, then they're going to be punished by the Republican Party base. So Trump is reshaping the Republican Party. And I know a lot of Republicans who don't particularly appreciate that, but they aren't saying that out loud on the record in print. And Democrats are taking advantage of it. They're making Trump an issue that the president normally wouldn't be in an off year legislative election in Virginia.
Senator Collins, I read something where she called herself a jurist and felt that she needed to remain quiet and continue to not make her thoughts and feelings on the impeachment inquiry known to others because she was still watching and listening. And she didn't feel it was right to announce her statement before she knew everything. And she thought that a lot of people should be pleased with that, but she understood where some people, I forget how she phrased it now, I should have made a note about it, how a party before country was the wrong way to do that.
Well, it's a logical position for her to take in a purple state or a state that Democrats could win a Senate seat in. So calling herself a jurist is technically correct. It looks like impeachment is going to happen. It's going to be voted on and sent to the Senate from the House. And she would be a juror. She would be one of 100 jurors hearing the case of whatever is brought as articles of impeachment against the president. At the end of this year or perhaps the beginning of 2020. So it's a convenient way for someone who wants to duck the demand from the president that he be fully and loudly supported by people in his party.
Do you think that there's, or do we have any idea from polling what percentage of Virginia voters might consider themselves having already decided one way or the other, and what percentage might be feeling themselves jurists who need to hear more information?
Well, there is a rather consistent polling effect that shows strong support among the base of the Republican Party for President Trump, and that hasn't changed significantly, even as he has tried to weed the party out of what he calls never Trumpers or folks who do not support him in the Republican Party. There are plenty of Republicans in Virginia who now refer to themselves as independents because they are not lined up behind the president and do not approve of his actions and words on Twitter. So it hasn't hurt Republicans yet in terms of their numbers of elected officials, but they worry that it might.
All right, our guest today, Bob Gibson from the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at the University of Virginia. Also that name familiar from Charlottesville's Daily Progress, where he was the political writer and columnist for over 30 years. Bob, we're going to take our second break, and we shall return. Be right back. And we're back with Bob Gibson. Bob participating by phone today after getting energized from that Washington Nationals parade and celebration. Bob, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And I should also say something to correct what I just said, that it hasn't hurt Republicans yet, that there are folks in the party who are veering away from Trump and that Trump is trying to ensure that he has support of all Republicans. It hasn't hurt them yet this year. Of course, it hurt them 2 years ago when 15 new members of the General Assembly were elected as Democrats. It hurt them last year when three new women were elected to Congress from Virginia, taking Republican seats. So it isn't true that it hasn't hurt Republicans yet. It just hasn't hurt them yet this year.
And I guess we'll find out on Tuesday if this year continues
the trend or breaks the trend. It's tough to tell how this trend will be carried forward.
Right. And that's why this is the pre-election day show. Next week, we'll have Rachel Bitterkofer on the show from CNU to talk about post-election day politics. So tune in again next Sunday on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call to talk about the trend of politics and what the impeachment inquiry, all that might have played into election day. We're doing pretty well here. Bob Gibson 1 week, Rachel Bitterkofer the next. Really racking it up. Bob, I want to ask about, I'm going to say that it might have a role in things. So let's talk a bit about Democrats possibly doing some work in taking over some things in the legislature. Because this is WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, so we do have to have hopes and dreams. If the end results are that the Virginia legislature is that Democrats win enough seats to take over both sides of the House of Delegates.
Both sides of the Capitol, you mean the House and the Senate?
Yes, sorry. Lower and upper, is that what it's called?
Sort of. The folks in the Senate refer to the House as the lower house. The folks in the House don't refer to themselves that way.
Okay. And they already have the governor, lieutenant governor.
And Attorney General. The Republicans have not won a statewide election in Virginia in 10 years. The last Republican candidate on the ballot statewide to win election in Virginia was Bob McDonnell, who was elected governor in 2009, 10 years ago. So it's a long run in statewide elections, and those have larger turnouts. And smaller turnout off-year elections, such as we have this year, Republicans normally do better and have maintained control of the House of Delegates for that time, since actually 20 years now, 1999 is when they took the House. And they have had a few back and forths in the Senate, but have had mostly control this decade in the Senate of Virginia.
Has there been conversation about what the Democrats would do with, what are their early laws that they would put forth if they had full control?
Yes. You're talking about the issues that the candidates are talking about all the time. And I think those fall into three categories for the Democrats. Women's rights, women's reproductive rights, abortion rights. Gun control, which is a major issue in many parts of urban and suburban Virginia for Democrats, and a major issue the other way in rural Virginia for Republicans. And workers' rights, such as a higher minimum wage, which I think eventually they want to get to $15 an hour, which UVA just largely accomplished in the last week, thanks to President Jim Ryan. So we're going to see an emphasis on passage of the ERA, for example, if the Democrats win both the House and the Senate of Virginia. We're going to see some gun control measures restricting perhaps the size of bullet-carrying devices that you can strap onto weapons and some more background check and other legislation restricting the ability of anyone to go out and get an assault rifle. And also workers' rights. I think there'll be a host of issues that Democrats will push to give workers more of a say of running companies, perhaps. Collective bargaining, for example.
And do you think, I know that the governor attempted to bring the legislative assembly back to Richmond for a special session on gun control. Do you think that that would be the first topic?
That'll be the only topic on November 18th when the General Assembly, as currently constituted, the 2018-2017 General Assembly, elected in 17 and not going out of office until January after this next week's elections. So the old House, the Republican-controlled House, which put off gun control measures prior to the election, and the old Senate, the Republican-controlled by one-seat Senate, will be the General Assembly to meet on November 18th to consider gun control issues. It's not clear what they will have to do and how much they can accomplish before the new House and Senate take office, especially if there's a major change.
All right. Bob, I want to talk with you about this. We have about 10 minutes left in the program. For a lot of time in the past year with candidates running, candidates weren't even listing the party behind their names. Not just Republicans, but a lot of Republican candidates weren't listing which party they were associated with because they, as we mentioned earlier, not all of them wanted to be associated with President Trump. They, whether it was because of some of the politics or the behavior, some of them wanted to be a little more independent, possibly. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of that this year. There are a lot of candidates who are, say, Republican candidates in the suburbs that are increasingly becoming more Democratic. Well, I'm not stressing their Republican Party affiliation in their literature or in their signage. So you'll see candidates running for the House of Delegates in Prince William County, for example, in Northern Virginia, who won't be citing that they are Republicans. In rural Virginia, you will see Republicans. Even some local candidates are calling themselves Trump Republicans to boost their standing with the base of the party. So it all depends on where you are. But I think the trend is accelerating this year, that Republicans in urban and suburban areas are not stressing their party as much.
So I want to read this, if you'll bear with me for a minute. I found this in the Washington Post from October 31st, and it talks about how a number of candidates. This one focuses on a Republican, but it talks about how multiple Republicans have taken a hard right in the last few days to focus on their fact that they are Republicans because they feel the need to get the Republican vote to win. Talks about a candidate whose last name is Vandergriff, is how it starts. Vandergriff has spent much of the year running for the House of Delegates with Hillary Blue campaign signs and a website that touts public schools and the environment, but makes no mention that she's a Republican. Days before Tuesday's state election, Vandergriff is executing a hard right turn toward her GOP base. She is blasting her opponent, Democrat incumbent Delegate Schuyler T. Van Valkenburg, as a socialist who wants to abort babies at the moment of birth and choose illegal immigrants over his own constituents in crucial swing districts from Northern Virginia to Richmond to Hampton Roads. Republican candidates are trying to turn out GOP voters while hoping they can hang on to the centrist images they cultivated all summer. To pull it off, they're casting Democrats as extremists, invoking hot-button issues such as abortion and immigration that Republicans had largely avoided as they attempted to soften their connection to an unpopular President Trump. The strategy was to try to make it comfortable for women to vote Republican again. So again, that's a quote, that's a paragraph from a Washington Post October 31st article. Can you follow up on that?
Well, it is a trend. In the last 2 weeks of the campaign, you often see get out the vote efforts by candidates sort of ginning up the base by using the emotional appeals that they can to issues such as abortion. The Democrats have had some bills that Republicans characterize as allowing late-term abortions. And the even though those are extremely rare in Virginia, it's a very emotional issue, and Republican candidates are using it to try to gin up their base and get them to turn out. At this point, it's not really an election or a set of elections that are about persuasion. It's a set of elections that are about turnout, turning out your base vote. So Republicans are throwing the kitchen sink. In terms of names, Democrats in the Henrico district you were referring to, calling Delegate Skylar Van Valkenburg a socialist who wants to abort babies and welcome immigrants is typical of the language that Republicans are now turning to in the last 2 weeks to try to make sure their base gets emotionally charged and out to vote. Democrats are doing similar things. I mean, Democrats are calling Republican candidates extreme in the last 2 weeks and will cite votes that they have made to make sure the Democrats feel incensed and want to get out and vote.
Certainly, no doubt, everyone is doing their best. I just found it interesting using Hillary blue campaign signs is what caught my eye in that article.
Yeah, well, it all depends on where you're running. I mean, all politics is local, except this year it's also nationalized.
56 minutes after the hour, just a few minutes left with our guest today, Bob Gibson, senior researcher at UVA's Walden Cooper Center, as well as a well-known political writer and columnist in the Charlottesville area for his 30-plus years at the Charlottesville Daily Progress. Bob, a question for you. What are your thoughts on automatic registration for voting when you turn 18 years old?
I think there should be more opportunities for 18-year-olds to register and have the registrars take their registration outside their office on occasion into the high schools to make sure that folks, first of all, there has to be more civic education taught so that they know what they're voting for and what the American system is and how our republic operates and what kind of democracy and what kind of republic we are. But I think it would be very helpful to set the right patterns for voters because you set your patterns in your early years of voting in terms of a level of participation that you're going to carry on through your life. And I think it would be very helpful for registrars to get out and make sure that there are more high school students who are given civic education and given an opportunity to easily register to vote.
Do any states do anything like that, or do all states require you to come to their office?
Oh, many states. And Virginia doesn't require you to come to the office. Virginia does some of this outreach, but it doesn't seem to be as widespread as perhaps it has been in past years. And maybe that's because it happens mostly most often in the press, at least in presidential years. But Virginia does have a few more hurdles, perhaps, that we aren't as easy to register and easy to vote as some states.
And, Bob, can I ask, on Election Day, have you already voted? Will you be home in the area to vote and watch things?
I have already voted, and I tend to do that more often these days, but I don't necessarily think it's great for everyone to do that. I think people want to vote when they decide who they want to vote for. And the fact that there are very few contested elections in Charlottesville made it very easy for me to vote early this year.
All right. Again, our guest, Bob Gibson. He's the communications director and senior researcher at UVA's Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service. Bob, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Rick. It's always a pleasure to be on the show.
All right. All right, everybody. Be here next week with us as we have Rachel Bitticoffer here from CNU's Wesson Mason Center. All right. Until next week.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Engineering assistance was by Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.